Okay, some of our listeners getting involved in this conversation in relation to cuts in an allowance, or however you might describe it, for bras and other things for women post-operative cancer. Siobhan joins us. Siobhan, good morning to you.
Hi, Greg.
What's your reaction to this story?
Shocked, but not surprised, because a few years ago it was threatened before. Mm-hmm. And it was pulled back. I'd love to know the Irish Cancer Society's attitude, is it, because there's a complete section on their website about the importance of bras, mm-hmm. balance, hygiene, the whole thing. Simple fact, right? If I said to you, you have one pair of underwear, mm-hmm. live with it. What are you going to do when you're washing it, laundering it?
Yeah.
They talk about an allowance. It's not actually an allowance. You go through the breast unit in Letterkenny Hospital, and the kind ladies there measure, assess whether it's increasing, reducing, or whatever. It's done professionally. The bras are then provided. There's no money involved. It's like saying, as far as I'm concerned, it's like saying to somebody that's, say, diabetic, you need insulin, but sorry, we're only going to give you 50%. That sounds dramatic, but for some people's mental well-being, that's what it is. Definitely, I agree with them. They wouldn't be doing it if it was a man. I'd love to know the person who has come up with the idea, name and shame, ask them how they would love with it. Mm. It is an important part of life. Not everyone goes for rebuilds. I have been using the service for 22 years and I couldn't praise them enough. I just think it's disgusting that they're always hitting. It's either disabled people, the vulnerable children, people who need care and can't be speaking for themselves, or in this case, they think people are embarrassed because they wear prosthesis. Oh no, they're not going to fight back. It's time for emails to TDs.
Yeah, that's the point I put to Lynn as well, Siobhan. I just wondered if they thought that, you know, because for some this is a difficult issue to talk about publicly, if that it would just go under the radar. Mm-hmm. But clearly not. Women aren't going to allow that to happen.
That day is gone. That day is gone. No, Greg, I don't know. I know somebody made a reference there to the RT and that. As far as the governments are concerned, you can have any government sitting there, but it's the senior civil servants in each department that make the decisions. All the ministers are mm-hmm. signatories. So as far as I'm concerned, this is time for TDs, because this isn't just a Donegal issue. This is a national issue. Mm-hmm.
That's a woman's
issue. The ladies of Ireland are getting a kick again. On one hand, they're talking about the new vote that's coming up about how they're going to level the family. On the other, mm-hmm. they're kicking at the mainstay in a household. Mm. The lady.
Okay. Powerful stuff, Siobhan. Thanks for your time. I know you've other things on, so I appreciate you sparing the time to speak with us. And Mary is with us as well. Mary, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. I missed the beginning of the conversation there. It was only whenever you read it out then to say that there was been cuts now. Yeah. Like, I don't follow the news big time, but I missed that now. But I think I missed out the first year and a half before I even knew that I was entitled to bras because of my breast cancer. And it's Michael Honey's now that in Ballymafay. And they are very, very good, but I have to get a letter from my doctor every year to go to Michael Honey's to get that. But if that is half, then that means that I have, as that lady was saying, one underwear. Like, so when I take it off to wash it, then I'm not going to have another one, because the first year or year and a half, I was using the bra that the hospital had given me in Galway after my operation. Mm-hmm. So it was washed and back on again. And as I said to the lady on the line, mm-hmm. on the office there, that when, like, I mean, I have a drawer, like, I mean, it's people probably laughing, but I had a drawer full of every colour. And I just can't wear them because they hurt me where my lumps was removed mm-hmm. from. So therefore, I do have to go and get measured. Like, it's not like I can go into Pennies and buy a bra, like, you know, and that'll do me. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't work like that now anymore. So for that to be cut now, it's just, as the lady before you said, it's just, it's a slap in the teeth to the women again, like, you know, and putting them down.
Mary, I want to hear what you have to say. Sorry, go ahead. I thought you were finished.
Well, it's just like, you know, it's hard. It's hard whenever, like, you know, if you're on a social welfare payment, like I'm on a widow's pension, like, and it just doesn't, you know, you're trying to keep a house, you're trying to keep a car, you're like, I don't drink and I don't smoke. So therefore, like, I mean, yes, my car, my light, my heat, whatever. But it's just so hard. Like, I mean, when the price of living has gone up big time as well. So, like, you know, what do you do? Where do you go? Like, you know, it's just...
Well,
just,
I suppose, as the bills come out, you go, well, what is the one thing that I'm not going to spend money on? And it could be this item. You know what I mean? And the HSE tried this in 2017, and I'm not sure if they made changes later in 2017, but they've been looking to cut this for a long, long time. You know, and I mean, if I was a woman, yeah, I would feel that, oh, okay, here we go again. And I know that's a point that's come across during this conversation, but it is the elephant in the room. Would this happen if this were something that affected men exclusively? Can't say yes or no, but my strong suspicion is that it wouldn't happen because the majority of the people making these decisions are men.
Yes, exactly, exactly. I've said that for so long. I've been involved in community, in volunteering in groups in over 20 years, and I swear to God, how it just makes you so annoyed that it's always men that are behind these decisions, even for, you know, like for different things that would have been affecting women and the women's groups that we brought together cross-border. And it's just... I don't know where it ends. Like we actually even done a program before where, like, you know, trying to get 50% women, 50% men in government and that. And we done a training on it, but it's just not viable for women. It's just not, it just doesn't suit them at all. Like away from home, especially if you're in Donegal or you're near Malinhead or Greencastle, like you're away in the morning, you're back you're not back for a week, like, and it just doesn't sit right. Like, I mean, that it's men all the time making the decisions. So, but hey, that's where we are. And you know what? Unless we stand up together. And the other thing is, I don't really totally understand this vote that's happening. But to actually turn around and to try and take women out of our constitution for voting, like, I mean, and all that, like, no, I don't agree with that, because it was women had to fight a big time away back in the early 1900s to actually be able to have a vote. So, like, why take that word out of our constitution now?
Mm-hmm. Okay, listen, Mary, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it. So, if I'm looking at information in relation to the entitlements people might have. I presume this is previously mastectomy. This is from Roaches. Mastectomy bras by two, breast prosthesis by one, two for a bilateral surgery type, swimming breast prosthesis by one, two for a bilateral surgery type, mastectomy swimwear by one. So it says, ask your GP or medical professional to write your prescription for the products listed below. Now, if I go to cancer.ie, I presume this is updated information then, so you're entitled to €200 every year towards a prosthesis, €400 if you had a double mastectomy, and €60 every year towards your mastectomy bra. So there is a huge cut there. There's just no doubt about that. There seems to have been a huge cut in relation to what people are entitled to, what women actually are entitled to. Okay, we'll be moving on to Wellness Wednesday. Of course, we have been talking about wellness of a different sort, but Wellness Wednesday is coming up for you after the break. Right, on today's Wellness Wednesday, we discuss the Beat Goes On conference for young people with congenital heart disease and their families. It's taking place this coming Saturday, the 24th of February. Sheila Campbell is CEO of Heart Children, and Sheila joins us on the programme now. Hi, Sheila.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Almost 19,000 people are estimated to be living with CHD in Ireland. 500 to 600 of them children born here with the condition annually. Is there sort of different stages in life where this becomes apparent, i.e. maybe it can be early on, but I would know people sort of later in life in their teens or early 20s that something came up, and it turns out that they had congenital heart disease. Is that how it works or can work?
Yes, it can work. It can be something that there's a delayed diagnosis on, and it can be some problem that actually just raises its head, you know, at a later point in life. But the majority of cases are diagnosed now at the 20-week scan. So 70% of all babies of the 500 and 600 that you're talking about are diagnosed at the 20-week scan, which is phenomenal, really. It gives the parent a great deal of time to prepare, to get over the shock, you know, of what's to come. And it may be simple enough to fix, or it could be, you know, a very serious problem for life. And it also allows the medical professionals to be ready when the baby is born and to be, you know, to make an assessment of what they need to do immediately.
And it can start,
so the majority will be picked up.
Sorry, Sheila, continue. Sorry, I thought you were finished there. There's a slight delay. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just to say that, you know, the rest of the children would be diagnosed probably at birth, or, you know, and then a smaller percentage would be the ones that you've mentioned that might be diagnosed later in life.
And it can set the child, of course, and parents, guardians, on a path, can't it? Learning that information more often than not early on. But then at what stage does it become clear the treatment options or the treatment pathways that are there for the child once born?
Well, the first thing, I guess, is to say that congenital heart defects, there's over 40 different types of congenital heart defect, and all of them would have different ways of being treated surgically. So I think until the baby is born and until they can get a clear picture of the structure of the heart, and they probably won't necessarily know, or you know, in some cases they may know because it might be obvious on the 20-week scan. So at birth, I suppose they'd be deciding what is the plan for the child. And I think depending on their, you know, their wellness or not, you know, that surgical procedure or intervention might happen quicker than, you know, and sometimes the baby can just be too small and they need the baby to actually put on weight and to grow a little if the child in any way is born immaturely or is underweight at birth. So there's many factors that would be decided upon when it comes to what the treatment is going to be.
Mm-hmm. But how often do we know might it require surgery?
I think in the majority of cases, it would definitely require intervention, and in the majority of cases, it will require surgery. You know, there are simpler forms of CHD, and that might be a hole in the heart. Many people will have heard of that. And in many of those cases, it's a repair, and those children may never look back. They may be, you know, free from medical monitoring for the rest of their life as they grow older. But for about 20% of all cases, they have the complex forms of CHD, and they can be things that mean that you only have half a heart operating. The heart can be turned backwards in the body. It can be on the wrong side of the body. So some of these things, you know, lead to much, much more complication and therefore much more complexity in treating them throughout life. And those children will have repetitive surgeries as they grow, as the heart grows, and particularly if they have, you know, valves and things that need replacing. As the heart grows, they will need to be replaced as well. So that, you know, for some people that would go, you know, go on for quite a while. And some people with CHD may have long periods of when they're well. But they do need medical monitoring because the likelihood is at some point, you know, that they will need to be assessed and there could be surgery required at a later stage.
Would it be fair to say that, or accurate to say, that we have seen great advances in this area in terms of diagnoses and treatments and what have you over the last number of years?
Absolutely. You know, as I've mentioned about the scanning, I mean, that's a huge step forward in sort of medical advances and being able to know that there's going to be a child born with CHD and for parents to know the diagnosis at that very early stage. And even now, some of the procedures that, you know, would have done and wouldn't have had as great outcomes through more medical advances, you know, the percentage positive outcomes from them are much higher at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So like everything else, you know, with more technology and more ways of doing things and, you know, sometimes it just makes it so much easier, and there's so many more options for the medical professionals to offer to the parents in terms of treatment for the child.
Karen Gillespie joins us as well. Karen is from Buncrana and is mum to Alfie, who is five. Karen, thanks so much for joining us and helping us to raise awareness and highlight this condition.
Morning, Craig. How are you?
I'm good. Tell us about Alfie and when he was diagnosed and what happened after that.
Alfie was premature. He was born premature. Mm-hmm. So he was 6 weeks early. So whenever he was in neonatal then, he was 10 days old whenever they could hear the murmur. Alfie was actually scanned for the heart defect at the 20-week scan, but unfortunately it was missed at that stage. Mm-hmm. But then again, you have to think about the size of their wee hearts at that stage. It's the size of your thumbnail. Wow. So that's what Sheena was saying, only 70% is picked up at that stage. But whenever Alfie's was picked up, he was 4 pounds, so he needed to put on weight before he could have any intervention. So when he was 6 weeks, then he did go to Crumlin for his investigations, and we were told they had a large hole in the heart, and he also had a blockage in the aortic valve. Mm-hmm. So he had that repaired in Crumlin at that stage, whenever he was 6 weeks.
And I can only imagine what it must have been like, Alfie so little being born, but also so little then to go for the exploration and then surgery as well. It's incredibly tough on mums and dads.
Yeah, it definitely is, especially whenever your baby is born and whenever they're born premature, and then to be told that he has a heart defect as well. It was quite daunting. But with myself, I also have a CHD as well, and I had surgery, so we kind of had it in the back of our minds, were we expecting it, were we not? So that's why he was screened at the time. Mm-hmm. And just with my family as well, obviously they've gone through it with us, so like we had the support background there for us, and we were kind of prepared and what to expect, and the medical staff were great. He was born not in the Galvin because I was in Derry at the time. Mm-hmm. Whenever I went into labour, and then he was transferred then to Crumlin for surgery, and he was then sent to the Royal in Belfast for his recovery, and then we came back to McGalvin. Then it wasn't long after that when he had a surgery, you could see every single day then the difference in him. Wow. He was just like a new baby. He just a new baby after a surgery. It was definitely needed.
Now,
he hasn't looked back since.
Well, this is fantastic. And in Alfie's case, is this a one-time intervention, Karen, or will he maybe require further surgery into the future, or is it a wait and see process, or what's the situation with Alfie?
It is a wait and see process. He does get seen every 6 to 12 months. They always say never say never. We don't know. Hopefully not, but he will be just monitored every 6 to 12 months now to see how he gets on. Yeah.
And is that the same with you, Karen, or with your congenital heart defect?
Yeah, so whenever I was born as well, it wasn't picked up at birth. It was whenever I was 6 months. I was actually admitted into our local hospital for double pneumonia and bronchitis, and it was then that they picked up the murmur as well. So whenever I went to Crumlin when I was a year for my investigations, I was diagnosed with aortic stenosis. Mm. So I then had a balloon dilation when I was 5, and then when Alfie had his heart surgery in May 2018. I had my open heart surgery then in December 2018. So my surgery is to last 8 to 10 years. So we'll see from that then when I'll require another procedure again. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I mean, obviously, you can't get any closer a bond than that between a mother and a son. But there's an extra sort of closeness there, I think, with you and Alfie, Karen.
Of course, yeah. And I do have another wee boy as well. He was born there in December, and he got his investigations done just before Christmas, and his heart is 100%.
Okay, that's great. It must have just been an emotional roller coaster for you. I'm just thinking, after the 20-week scan, did you sort of hold a little bit back, saying, well, maybe the missed it with Alfie, or were you on a high thinking, right, okay, he's not affected, and then obviously learnt later on, or it must have been, you must have been all over the place. Well, I suppose it depends on our individual character, but it sounds to me like you were up and down through that whole thing.
Well, yeah, whenever we were in the 20-week scan, obviously that did give us hope. But they do say when you're in there that there is a possibility, okay, that they could miss something, because obviously the heart is so small.
Just the thumb size, yeah. But you have to be pragmatic, I suppose, yeah.
Of course, yeah. And then whenever he was a neonatal and he was up and down, we kind of knew that there might have been something there.
Yeah.
And then at 10 days old, they did say whenever a baby is born, it can take 10 days to hear a heart murmur. And it did take the 10 days, and it was then that he was sent for his investigations then, yeah.
Okay. So, Sheena, what, you know, what do we... It is about raising awareness. It's important to do so.
Yeah.
So what do you want to come from these awareness months? Is it that people look out for maybe signs and symptoms, that they have an understanding that, you know, there are other people going through this? You know, every sort of awareness month or day or week or whatever it might be, you know, has a particular aim. Where do we need to be at in terms of understanding, I suppose, and acknowledging widely congenital heart defects?
I think it's the very basic, that people just don't know what congenital heart disease is, and that it's not anything that you've done. It's not, you know, lifestyle related. You are born with it and you will have it for life. And so it's just an awareness of how serious a condition it can be. It is what we call a invisible disability or silent disability, because, you know, you could look at somebody with CHD. Karen's a beautiful looking woman. You would never know that she had CHD and required open heart surgery. But with that, you know, the symptoms that probably go around it are like extreme fatigue and lack of concentration. So, you know, people with CHD do have to mind themselves a lot more. And that is something that we, you know, maybe when we're at school or at work, that people are you know, aware of it, and maybe just make small concessions, mm-hmm, for people who have CHD.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to understand the reason why they can't take part in sports and things like that, because, you know, contact sports, and when you have, you know, mechanical valves and stuff in your heart, or issues with your heart, when, you know, if you're getting knocked or bounced around, it's just not possible for you to take part in those sports. But that said, there are so many others, golf, tennis, all the other ones that you can take part in. And, you know, I think the best thing that people with CHD probably can do is do as much as they possibly can, like everybody else, and just get on with their lives. But it's just to be aware of what it is, that it's a major illness. It's the number one birth defect worldwide.
Wow.
And that comes before cleft palate or Down syndrome. So every, you know, one in every 100 children born worldwide has a congenital heart defect. So, you know, we talk about cancer, childhood cancer, but, you know, it is up there as being one of the very serious illnesses that affect children. And, you know, when some children can, you know, recover from cancer, you know, if you have serious complex CHD, you have it for life. So it's a lifelong illness. There is no cure. It's a, you know, it's repetitive surgeries to repair and patch. And, you know, it's just to recognize that these, yeah, people are living with something that day to day they are coping with.
It's a
mix,
isn't it?
Because, you know, generally, well,
it's incredibly serious, but at the same time, there's hope as well. It's striking that balance, isn't it, in the understanding of,
yeah,
it. So the conference,
yeah,
is taking place on Saturday in Dublin between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Mm.
Obviously, maybe some people may be able to get down from the northwest. Is there a webinar element to it, or is it all in person?
No, there's no webinar element, because we do a lot of breakout sessions.
Understood.
And one-on-one work with the young people and with the parents, because we also want to try. We're trying to teach confidence and resilience in these young people, because at age 16 they leave the protective bubble of Crumlin and they move to the Mater Hospital, and they're in with all the people with, you know, coronary heart disease as well. So they move from a very protective environment where they will have known everybody, and at every appointment they'll have probably met the same people. And now they're into a new space, and now they're going without mum and dad, most likely, because they now have to take control of their own medical future. They need to know their condition. They need to be able to take on board the advice and the terminology that the doctors will use. So they just need to be very self-activated and self-aware, and know the symptoms that might mean that they're heading into dangerous zones, to make contact with the hospital, that kind of thing. Okay. So, and with that becomes the whole mental impact of that. Do you know what I mean? So we're providing them with that teaching, and also the parents, and how to take a step back and let go, and let your child, you know, step forward.
Some people see a great advantage in coming together with their peers or peers in a similar situation to them as well. Sheila Campbell, CEO of Heart Children, thank you so much for your time. Karen Gillespie from Buncrana, best wishes to you and Alfie and all the family. Thank you so much for helping us to try and raise awareness. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Karen. Okay, back with more shortly. I wanted to say thank you, by the way. Yesterday was National Love Your Pet Day, or International Love Your Pet Day. It was an excuse to see your pets, and we got some lovely pictures of dogs and cats, cocks and pheasants, and we put a selection of them up. We had a huge reaction, by the way, of all your beautiful animals, and we got a selection of them up on our social media, up on Facebook, Highland Hub. So if you like looking at other people's animals, get in and have a look. As I say, it was quite nice. Lovely to see them. Right, some comments here. Business Matters is on the way, by the way. Our daughter was born with a heart condition. We were not aware until after birth. Airlifted by the Air Corps. Open heart surgery at 6 days and again at 18 months. The team in Crublin are top class. Teenager now and doing well. Okay, big shock, but great to hear things are working out well. Just in relation to the changes that are being made to women's entitlement post-breast surgery, heretofore, mastectomy bra by two, breast prosthesis by one, two for a double surgery, swimming breast prosthesis by two, mastectomy swimwear by one. Now, €200 every year towards a prosthesis, 400 if it's a double mastectomy, £60 every year towards mastectomy bras. It's a big cut. They've been looking to cut this area since 2017, and there was a furore in 2017. They delayed the decisions then till later in 2017, made some changes. This has been like everything, like we're children, you know, like we're mushrooms, like the St. Joseph situation, treating us like idiots. You know, we're going to have to get to a point where the public's treated with respect in terms of decisions that are being made, that have the balls to announce a decision. Say, from this date, this is what's happening. Why do the public have to discover what's happening, then kick up a stink, and then hope to get it reversed one way or other? You know, it's like the SET changes. Why wasn't there a public consultation for a year with parents, with teachers? You know, this is in relation to the allocation of special education teachers' hours. Like, why are we treated like kids? I mean, you actually, do you know what? In this day and age, you wouldn't treat them like kids. You can't treat them like kids. We can't treat our kids in Donegal like kids. For instance, like the defective crisis, a concrete crisis we were discussing earlier. We can't treat our kids like kids anymore because they have to live this life and we have to explain it to them because it's everywhere. So we actually don't treat our children like I'm asking the powers that be it civil service, be it government, whatever. Please treat us like grown-ups. Have a consultation. If you have to put something across the line after a consultation, just do it. Have the neck to do it. But let's talk about this. Why should every woman in the country potentially be affected by this a decision that no one had the testicular fortitude to speak about publicly? It had to be found out after the fact. The same with the SCTs, the same with St. Joseph's, on and on and on. A caller says it's not just bras for women, it's incontinent pads for beds. Getting nappies for people who are being cared for at home also went. We now have to buy them. It's a drip feed of the removal of services. Where does it end? Again, that's another area. And I'll be a big issue for incontinence pads or nappies is the disposal as well, especially with pay by weight. That's been introduced. I've spoken to people where they're getting a huge financial hit in relation to that. Now they're not getting them for free either. Again, it seems like it's done by stealth. Right, OK, let's take a breather. Let the blood pressure drop. Time for this.
Business Matters, in association with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. For a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT in Financial Services. Call 91-86206 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie today.
Okay, so that means it's time for Business Matters this Wednesday morning, and we say a very good morning to Chris Ashmore. Chris, thanks so much for calling in.
Hi, Greg.
Right, before we get to what's coming up on this week's podcast, let's get to a little bit of news. And Rafal native Garrett Hart in the headlines.
Yes, he's been named as the new chairman of the Donegal-Dublin Business Network. He's well known in media circles, a former editor-in-chief of News Talk radio station and founder of Heart Media, which is a communications and public affairs consultancy. So he succeeds Paul Doyle in the post. Paul from Letterkenny had been chairman since the inception of this group some 7 years ago. And by the way, they have just announced that they're holding an event to coincide with International Women's Day. That's going to take place in the Chop House restaurant in Dublin on March the 6th. And the gathering will be hosted by News Talk presenter and Ballyshannon woman Andrea Gilligan.
Now, we heard on the news, but well worth recapping, because there is money out there available for refurbishment of vacant and derelict properties. It can be a hard enough old area to navigate, but the council are going to help out there, I think.
Yes, now this is attracting quite a bit of interest. Grants of up to €84,000 are available to refurbish vacant and derelict properties that have been vacant for 2 years or more. Now, subject to certain conditions, there's also a repair and lease scheme, a support of up to €80,000 per unit. And then there's also some support may be available if you need a conservation expert to provide you advice on even refurbishing a vacant traditional farmhouse. Now, Donegal County Council are holding a series of meetings, Greg, all over the county. The first of them will be on Monday, February the 26th. That'll be at the Public Services Centre in Milford. There'll also be meetings in Raphoe, Ballyshannon, Remelton, Letterkenny, Convoy, Newton Cunningham, Moville, Ardragh, Widor, Balbuffet and Stranorler. So have a look at the council website or contact the council, because we all know there's a lot of vacant property in the county. And look, not everybody's going to be eligible or to have the little bit of capital you'll need to co-fund, but certainly worth looking into.
And of course, those details are on our website as well. Yeah. Local Enterprise Week just around the corner.
Yes, big week coming. Events will take place from Monday to Friday, March the 4th to the 8th. That's Local Enterprise Week 2024. An extensive range of events. You can book your place on the localenterprise.ie website, or else go to the Donegal Leo Facebook page. Lots coming, so worth checking out.
And news of an upcoming webinar too, Chris.
Yeah, there's a free webinar about gaining insights into business intelligence. It's been hosted with the Sligo-based Data to Sustain Digital Innovation Hub in collaboration with the Atlantic Technology University. And amongst the speakers will be Owen Foley, a lecturer in systems analysis at ATU, and Phelim Murnian, an information systems lecturer at ATU. So they'll be sharing their insights to help people understand this whole area.
And great minds think alike, Chris, because I took quite a bit of interest in the changes to the consumer price index, because it kind of holds a mirror up to us to some extent as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, the consumer price index, they have this basket of goods. There's over 600 goods that they use to calculate how they're going to get the consumer price index. So things come in and out. So digital cameras are gone, nightclubs are gone, the Swiss roll, which many people would see in the cupboard at home, that's gone.
So this happens,
this happens over a period of time, and you know, it just reflects the way society is changing.
And in things like air fryers and what
air fryers, yeah. So it's whatever's in vogue. There's usually a time lag of maybe a couple of years as things become more common. But another thing out is that the telephone landline used to be part
indeed,
of it.
So. Indeed. Okay, right. Let's talk about what's coming up on this week's podcast.
Yeah, looking at the whole area of apprenticeships. Now, there's a lot of changes here over the last few years, and we're going to see a lot more in the years to come. When you talk about apprenticeships, what springs to mind for most people are the traditional trades and crafts, plumbing, electrical, etc. But now we have a situation where there are a lot more apprenticeships on offer, ranging from financial services to engineering, farming to hospitality, even biopharma, retail. And some of these courses, they're tied in with the whole FITAC and the education system, and you can go up to level 10, which even up to a master's. So big changes there. So I've been speaking with Vinnie McGrory, apprenticeship manager with Donegal ETB, and Lorraine Murray, the senior apprenticeship training advisor, who've been explaining all the changes and just what is available.
In its simplest terms, an apprenticeship is a structured education and training program which combines and alternates learning in the workplace with learning in a training and education centre. It's in the simplest terms. So something like an electrical apprenticeship, which most people know, would be a combination of working with your employer, coming into a training centre, like an ETB training centre, learning the theory and the practical, going back out to your employer, and then alternating between your employer and either an ETB or a TU to do the theory side of things. And at the end of that apprenticeship, you have the capacity, the skills, the knowledge to work autonomously in your chosen trade so that you can set up your own or you can work with a company. But after the 4 years you have completed, you are a qualified craftsperson in that craft.
Okay, Chris, interesting. We're going to hear the full interviews on the podcast. And it's something personally over the last couple of years, the move towards apprenticeship and the valuation of them and giving them almost equal standing to other pathways to progression in life. I think it's been a fantastic thing. One thing always annoyed me when people talked about skilled labour, and it was as if all linked to do with education, but without a lot of the apprenticeships you talk of, maybe the more traditional ones, the building, welding and all that kind of stuff, you know, incredibly, incredibly highly skilled stuff. We'd have nothing really, nowhere to live. The housing crisis would be much worse than it is. So really good to see the, in fairness to the government and Simon Harris, the focus on encouraging and promoting apprenticeships. So the full interview available on our website right now, highlandradio.com, for you to stream from there or download. Also available on Spotify or iTunes and broadcast live on the radio too, Chris.
Yes, on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news. And if you want to contact me, it's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chris Ashmore, thank you very much for calling in to us. And we'll be back with Chris next week, of course. We'll be back with more on this show after we take this quick break. We're joined in studio now by Camille Satinskaty. We're going to talk about the rental crisis in Donegal. It can be framed as such, can't it, Camille?
Yes, absolutely. So, personally, now, I moved up here to Letterkenny in 2018. Now, of course, I lived in student accommodation starting off. But even at that point, you could notice that, you know, the rent wasn't too bad. Mm. So it was student accommodation, €400 a month each per person. Four bedrooms, that's €1,600. For a four-bedroom house, that's still not
decent
bad.
Decent return, isn't it, though?
Absolutely, very decent. After my student accommodation, I had then actually moved into a house with just one other friend, and we were paying €640 for a three-bedroom house, double storey, back garden, front garden, spare bedroom, kitchen, living room. Now, in 2024, I am living in a converted shed for €700 a month. So it has a communal kitchen and living room, the one bedroom and then the one bathroom. So going from a house for 640 to, you know, basically a granny flat.
You're living in a room with access to a toilet,
yes,
and shared kitchen.
Yeah, basically.
That's it. And it's, yeah, £700 a month.
Yeah, exactly.
You probably, in a way, ironically, feel lucky to have got that, because there probably aren't 15 of these types of accommodation available in Letterkenny, if you know what where I'm coming from.
Oh, absolutely. My choices for when I was looking for a house in last July was either a two-bedroom apartment for £1,250 a month or this for the £700, because anything else that was there was mica, there was rotting, there was mould, there was everything, you know. Mm. So you are very limited on your housing choices.
As a 24-year-old, you stated that you can no longer afford to live in the Republic of Ireland. I mean, that's stark, isn't it?
It is dark, but it's the truth.
And it's also, where do you if, say, a foot up the ladder, what's next? You know what I mean? If they come to you and say, by the way, we are moving our granny into this converted garage, you know, where do you go next? Is your future constantly sharing with other people? Is it every penny you earn just going into putting a roof over your head? You know, like, what are the options for people?
Absolutely. So personally for myself, I find that if that was the case and they decided, well, we're moving our granny back in here, I would either have to move home or leave the country, because even now I'm living paycheck to paycheck just to be able to afford to put a roof over my own head, which isn't the way a 24-year-old wants to live. It's not the way anybody wants to live.
Do you see any pathway at the moment to home ownership, or is that just not even on the radar?
But
do you see any scenario where that could happen?
Not in the next 20 to 30 years. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to be 50 years of age and only buying my house then.
And you're making a choice, really, in that your family is here. You want to be in reasonable access to your family. If that weren't the case, I don't think you'd be here.
If my family wasn't here, I would have been gone as soon as I had realised all the rent inflation. Mm. So about this time last year, I would have already left the country, just like so many of my friends who have went to the Netherlands, Germany, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, because it's more affordable.
And there's no real sign in sight of things improving, because if you look at in terms of the delivery of property, but also the demand that will be on it in terms of alternative accommodation for those affected by defective concrete, an increase in people moving here to live and work, which is fine, you know, with remote working and all that type of stuff. But the point is if you look at 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead, it's hard to see a situation whereby the rent crisis eases here.
Absolutely. From what I have noticed, you know, going from even my own family's experience from when my older sister moved out, was renting her own properties, to now, 10 years later, you know, the increase is absolutely astonishing. Mm-hmm. 17.7% is the average rent increase in Ireland. It's 39.9% in Donegal.
And if you look at the gap between in-situ renters and new renters, it's huge.
Oh, it's massive.
It's huge in this county. I think it's the second biggest, if not the biggest gap.
Oh, it's massive.
And that just, in the most plain way, points to the issue here. And then, of course, it's about availability, and it is a landlord's market, because there's more people that need property than there is property available. And it's very easy then to see why mums and dads, or whatever the combination might be, have 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds still living at home.
Absolutely.
Because we also have the lowest disposable income.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are on minimum wage here.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, minimum wage has gone up now in January in 2024, but so has the rent.
Yeah, but if you're 18, an adult, it's $10.40 an hour.
Yeah, $10.40.
I mean, I don't think that we should have a ticker tape parade for that either. Like,
no.
Why should an 18-year-old get $10.40
yeah.
if they say, right, I'm an adult now, I want to try and get out my own 2 feet? It's not an option.
No, it isn't an option. And I feel that, you know, just us ordinary people, we're not being taken seriously with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
There is a demand for houses, but there is no supply in Donegal.
I'm not sure how well rent pressure zones have worked down the country, but at least there's something there that's trying to keep a cap on things. There's no such thing here, which would, you'd be forgiven for thinking, well, there mustn't be a rental crisis in Donegal, but we know that's simply not the case.
No, unfortunately, I feel that the rental crisis is much higher in County Donegal. And as sad as it is, because I do love this county, I do feel that I am going to have to leave because I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Who can nowadays?
Your other half's in Northern Ireland, is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
What's the story up there? Like, if you drive through Northern Ireland, you see houses being built left, right and centre. I did actually notice that. I was driving to, I can't remember where I was going, Cavan or something, and it seemed every 5 minutes there was houses being built.
Yep.
Now, that's just purely my observation, anecdotal. But what's he saying?
He feels that Ireland is very overpriced in rent, in house buying. He himself was looking, you know, at moving over here, mm-hmm. buying a house. He couldn't afford it. From the north of the Republic. Whereas now he bought his own house there 6 months ago.
Right.
No problem at all in the north. He can afford it. He wasn't stuck. Nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and like, he is in and around my age. So going from him having a house to me living paycheck to paycheck to put a roof over my head.
And just to go, you know, sort of back to the beginning, this is your personal story. This is your
Absolutely.
Personal journey. But the top point that you've been making, or want to make, is that there's a whole generation that's similar to you in the similar in the similar boat that are having to make life decisions. It's because even at 22, 23, 24, it's where will I be in?
Yes.
You know, how will I get my independence? How can I do? And often, now the grass isn't always greener on the other side. A lot of people go to Australia and the house prices over there are through the roof and it's a tough old life, you know, for a lot of people. But anyway, with that being said, there are options. People moving within Europe or over to Northern Ireland, whatever it might be, you feel that we're going to lose a generation if we don't do something.
Personally, I do feel like we are going to lose the generation from 18 to 28, if not the whole way up to 30 or even higher. You know, I have had many friends, even since, say, November just passed, I've had seven friends move out of this country because they could no longer afford it.
All right, okay. It's interesting. It's interesting points, very strongly made, and it's backed up by reality.
Yep.
It's backed up by figures from, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, where we're at now, what's available now. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
This is not anecdotal. It's there for all to see. All right, listen, we'll try and get some reaction to what you've had to say. We really do appreciate you calling up. Great to see you. Sorry for keeping you waiting, but it was worth it.
At all.
Thank you so
Thank you so much.
That is Camille. It is Camille or Camelia?
Camila.
Camila, okay. You're so polite for not to correct me. You should have. Here's me trying to get Satin Skatey right. Perfect. First name out the window. All right. Thanks so much for calling
Thank
up.
So
I do
much.
Appreciate it. Have a wonderful day, everyone. We'll be back here on the 9 till noon show tomorrow morning from 9. John Breslin's around the Northwest after the news headlines.